In our first story of the show, Micah Craddy takes on the most nerve-wracking live performance he can think of, stand-up comedy, and lives to tell the tale.
I never really set formal goals for college. Perhaps goal setting would have been one of them had I got around to it. But there are certain things I figured I would have accomplished by graduation. Win the Super Bowl, win an Academy Award, and date a supermodel. Alas, I'm 6 feet, 160 pounds in shoes. I've never been to Hollywood, and as for the supermodel part, well, I'm 6 feet, 160 pounds, and I've never been to Hollywood. I did have one goal that seemed reasonable. I wanted to perform stand-up comedy at an open mic night, at a real comedy club, in front of an audience of strangers. Humor has always been a part of my family. My dad is a pastor, and he seems to spend as much time in the pulpit trying to entertain as he does trying to teach. Sorry, Dad. My brother would entertain groups of students in college with tales of our childhood. There was the one where my mom jumped into the pool fully clothed, the one where my mom started throwing rock-hard biscuits at us, and the one where my mom... Well, I'm getting away from the point. Oh, sorry, Mom. I had always liked making people laugh, but I was more comfortable doing it while sitting with them at the dinner table or in class. To get up in front of them, microphone in hand, was another story. I could have done it differently, maybe perform to an audience of my friends on campus or make a funny video and post it on YouTube. But I wanted the real deal, with all the peril and potential rewards that it offered. I figured that doing stand-up comedy would seriously help my dating life. I imagined it going something like this. Beautiful woman. So, what did you do this weekend? Me. Oh, I did stand-up comedy. Beautiful woman then faints into my arms. When she regains consciousness, she asks, but where did you do it? I reply, at a comedy club in San Francisco. Beautiful woman faints into my arms again, wakes up, calls all her sorority sisters to tell them the news, and there is much fainting. There were some roadblocks between me and the swooning women. First off, I had to write a stand-up routine. I had tried to do it a few years back, but I gave up after only managing a single paragraph on my insecurity over preferring smooth peanut butter to the more masculine chunky. A true story, but more sad than funny. Even if I could write the material, there was a second major obstacle. I'm a coward. Not just a coward, but a coward with stage fright. I strongly prefer talking about things to actually doing them. For instance, this year I was going to make a short film. It was to be a dark comedy, a humorous but slanted look at the angst of my romantic life. Entertaining, but also enlightening. I made surprising progress on the project. I actually wrote and cast the thing. But when it came time to film, well, I was pretty tired from all that writing and casting. A betting man would have put his money on me not performing, and some of my friends did. But there were a few things working in my favor. I had recently started writing comedic sketches, the kind of things you see on Saturday Night Live. Those were easier for me to write because they had stories and characters. I started carrying around a notebook to jot down my ideas and found that some of them were more suited for stand-up. After a while, I started having trouble falling asleep at night. I'd jump out of bed 6 or 7 times to write out ideas and make sure that I didn't forget them. Eventually, I had 10 pages of typed-out material. I even wrote special lines for hecklers or when jokes bombed. Excitedly, I scrolled through it, bolding the good jokes. There was not that much font and bold at the end, but there was enough to do a 5-minute routine. As for the cowardice, well, I volunteered to do an audio essay on the experience for the Stanford Storytelling Project. I might be able to put it off for a few weeks, but eventually I'd have to suck it up and get it done. I wanted to do it in San Francisco. It just sounded so much cooler than on campus or in Palo Alto, and I had heard of a place called The Brainwash that was supposed to be good for first-timers, which I assumed meant that it had a large audience that, while not particularly sober, would be epically supportive. This was in no way true, but I didn't know that at the time. I imagined them bathing me in wave after wave of laughter, only frowning when I told them at the end that it was my first time doing it. No, they'd say. That can't be true. I felt so close to him, why would he lie to us? I managed to put it off for a few weeks. My main strategy was to wait until the day I was supposed to perform before asking anyone to borrow their car. Unfortunately, by then, they all had other plans. But eventually, I could put it off no longer. I borrowed a car from a friend and headed up the freeway. I was a little on edge during the trip, but once I got into the city, things took a turn for the worse. My stomach collapsed in on itself, and it felt like a large, invisible man was sitting on my chest. I thought to myself, this is a stupid idea. I had come too far to back out, and you can't make U-turns on one-way streets, so I proceeded to the club. I accidentally parked 3 blocks away and passed about 100 empty spaces before I got to the Brainwash. Well, I actually wasn't sure it was the Brainwash when I got there. There are certain venues that are designed to do comedy, and then there's the Brainwash. To start with, it's not just a comedy club. It's a comedy club slash cafe slash laundromat. Yes, laundromat. About half the building's covered with washers and dryers, and the other half is the cafe. The stage is about 2 feet by 3 feet, and there is a combination lock on the bathroom to keep the homeless out. To be sure, the place had character. But how was I going to do stand-up here? There were a few tables in front of the stage, then a large open space in front of the door, and a few more tables about 30 feet farther back. In the car, I had decided that it would be best to be the 5th comic on stage. The audience would be warmed up, but I would be out of there quick enough that it wouldn't take up my whole evening. When I got to the sign-up sheet, I wrote my name down at the next available slot. 24th. This was going to be a long night. Things I learned while watching the 23 comics in front of me. Comedians hate Hillary Clinton. Comedians think Hillary Clinton is a lesbian. And comedians are not necessarily funny. There were some very talented comedians. There were a bunch of okay comedians, and there were some bad comedians. Let me tell you, a bad comedian in a half-empty room is an awkward situation. Sometimes you just laugh because the silence hurts too much. I'm still not actually convinced that they all knew they were on the stage to do comedy. It seemed like one guy was just yelling at us. I'm not sure what I did to make him angry, but after 4 minutes I felt really bad about it. After 2 hours and several trips to the bathroom, having learned the combination, it was nearing my turn. I was nervous, but there was no way I could back out now. As I stood next to the stage, or rather, as I stood next to the large step that acted as the stage, the host gave my introduction. This was actually pretty cool. If you've never performed at the Brainwash before, they give you a really loud ovation that lasts for quite a while. But this is a little deceptive, because it makes it seem like there are a lot more people in the audience than there actually are. As I was taking the microphone off the stand, I took a moment to scan the room. There were about 11 people scattered about, the bulk of them over 50 feet away from me in the back, and I wasn't even sure if they were paying attention. This was going to be an uphill battle. I had put a lot of thought into my opening joke, because I figured if I could hook them at the beginning, they'd be with me the whole time. But after the loud cheering, I changed my mind at the last second and cracked that their cheering would probably be the high point of my act. One guy might have chuckled. Note to self, don't tell the audience you aren't going to be funny. I had some notes typed out in one hand and the complete text of my routine in my back pocket, just in case. My routine was about my bad memory, so if I forgot anything, I figured I could just play it off like I did it on purpose. Unfortunately, my hand was shaking due to stage fright, and the white sheet of paper I was holding was flapping around like a flag in a hurricane. In speech classes, they tell you not to hold pieces of white paper while giving a presentation, but I had never taken a speech class. After the intro, I started into my material, and many of the jokes actually got laughs, or at least a laugh. There was one girl in the back that was loving me. She was my target audience from that point on. If all else failed, at least one person thought I was funny. While on stage, I became a little more sympathetic towards the comedians that had done poorly. It's hard to work a small crowd. It's even harder when most of the audience is signed up to perform. They're thinking about their jokes, not yours. As the time passed, I got a little more comfortable on the stage. I started changing my voice and using my body language for more than broadcasting fear. Until it happened. The thing I feared most. A joke bombed. Not only did it bomb, but this was one of the few times I actually paused to let the audience laugh. For the first half of my routine, I was pretty much just trucking through, but I had become confident enough to leave this space. An empty space. But, as you might remember, I was prepared for this. I used my backup line, and the audience loved it. It was one of my biggest laughs of the night. It was all downhill from there. I sort of stumbled through the last section of my routine, but managed to end on a positive note. I thanked the crowd, told them it was my first time, and got off the stage without having wet my pants. A success by any definition. So, I was not amazing, but I definitely was not the worst of the night, and it was my first time. I learned a lot from the experience. I learned how important it was to project confidence, to not step on the audience's laughter, and to speak in coherent sentences. More importantly, I had done it. I got looks of admiration whenever I told people about it. Me, on stage, in a real comedy club, in San Francisco. I've done it once more since then so far, and the second time went much better. I reworked my material, projected confidence, and packed the audience with my friends. I plan on continuing until I'm discovered or until I have a nervous breakdown. Either way, beautiful women, you should now feel free to faint.